He's the co-president of Sony Pictures Classics. Tom Bernard joins us on the program. He walks a golf course pretty much every day during this time. Tommy, how you doing, pal? Thanks a lot for doing this.
Great, Joey. Good to hear you. Yeah, you too. Golf in Canada. I like that.
So, Tom, is your golf course open right now? Because I remember you told me a couple of weeks ago you were walking the golf course. Then I think at one point they stopped you from walking, or did I hallucinate that?
No. They shut everything down. They sent everybody home, and there's a golf course about, I don't know, 7 minutes from my house. So I would just go there every morning and carry my bag and play golf, and there really wasn't, no one was paying any attention. And one day I was playing. I was like the only guy on the course. It was sort of under the radar, but it was open. I started seeing the flags disappear, and I kept playing, and I'd look, and the flag would be there. Then it wasn't. And by the time I finished, I got to the end, and the guy had put a sign up saying, course closed. And so I was the last guy to play, and they shut them down for, about 4 weeks. And when they opened them up, it was great. You got a tee time, and you had two holes open in front of you and two holes open behind you. And you just pull up, get out of your car, play. No carts, carry your bag, and get in your car and go home. It was, and it's still happening that way. They're kind of now expanding to foursomes, and they're starting to throw carts out, so it's not as smooth as it used to be, but was and still is the only thing to do because all the rinks are closed.
Our guest, Tom Bernard of Sony Pictures Classics. And Tom, where are you right now? Where is your golf course, and where do you live, just so people know?
I'm in Rumson, New Jersey, which is about 40 minutes outside of New York, right near the Jersey Shore.
And what's it been like during this time in terms of isolation? What's it been like? It's weird for everybody. What's it been like for you?
Oh, it's sort of, it's Groundhog Day, The way I get through it is I say, okay, I got a routine. I got to get up in the morning. I got to play golf. I set a bunch of conference calls, work throughout the day. If I do them on the golf course, I bought a little earpiece so I can mute it when I was hitting the ball. And there's nothing you can do. You're basically, I guess it's sort of what Bernie Madoff's jail's like. You're stuck in one place, can't leave. And you communicate with people online. I'm talking to a lot of my buddies in Canada. Around the country, everyone's dying because a lot of my friends are all play hockey and rinks are closed. I just got off the phone with Jimmy Dowd, who, he played like 700 games with about 700 teams. And he coaches a couple of junior teams down here. And so they're on a big meeting now, a Zoom conference to figure out how to do the tryouts for the junior team and how to open the rink. And I just saw something in USA Hockey where, they tell you how to clean your face mask and all these sort of details that, sound suspect. But anyway, that's sort of what I've been doing, just the same every day. And don't see any people. There's not many people on the street. I guess the scariest thing is going to the grocery store and seeing a guy behind you coughing with a mask on.
It's not funny, but it's. I've been there. That's why I laughed. And I met you through the Jerry Bruckheimer Bad Boys hockey tournament about a million years ago, back when we played in rinks with fences and not glass around the boards. But you're the co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, and you guys have made a ton of great movies over the years. I guess some of the ones people might know are Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Midnight in Paris, Capote, Blue Jasmine, Across the Sea of Time, Wings of Courage. You've won a ton of Academy Awards, but the movie business, like many other businesses
and
entertainment.
And Red Army. Don't forget Red Army.
That's right. You made Red Army, which was I was involved in helping to promote that. But Tom, talk about the movie business, when you got shut down, how that happened, and what's it like now trying to make movies?
Well, here's how I see it. Certainly the second things got shut down, I didn't think it would go this long, but We also thought if it did, we were going to make a list of, we have a library, I guess, of 500 titles of all kinds. We got Neil Young concerts, we got baseball movies called Sugar, we got hockey movies, we got soccer movies, we've got just a wide variety of film. And so we put them into categories and went to the ancillary departments at Sony, where we are, and said, look, here are the different categories. I want you to try and program this into the sports network areas, this into the music network areas, this into maybe some international stuff, this into your movie channels, and got that going quickly and got them promoting it on all the different services. So that was a very big success. And then the theaters closed down, and they're all the ancillary services are, you know, it's their heyday. They're doing great, and they're sending out as much publicity as possible to say the movie theaters will never open again. Your life has changed. You're going to have to stay home and watch stuff on TV instead of being able to go out and see the movies on the big screen the way they were made to be seen. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think really what's going to happen is people will go back to the movies once they feel safe. And when they feel safe, there's going to be some kind of vaccine, or there's going to be some sort of medical situation that's going to make you not as susceptible to catching the virus or not at all. And then I think people will go back to the movie theaters. But I think the movie theaters still are the key to all the rest of the streaming and the entertainment, because you when you open it on the movie screen, you open it on the movie theater, you get a different kind of publicity. You get higher level people that write about it. You get your talent on better TV shows. It's something that I think stamps that movie into, you know, a moment in time. I think if you look ahead 10 years from now and say, gee, what were the movies in the theaters before this thing hit this year, and what were the shows or the movies that were on the streaming, you're not going to remember much from the streaming, but you're going to remember a lot of the names from the movies that were in the Oscars and whatnot. So, you know, the theatrical tees up all the streaming, and I think it will be back, and I think people will go, but they're not going to go until something happens. If you took a poll today and said, how many people are going to go to the movies when the theaters open right now, it probably wouldn't be a lot of people that say yes. But if you said, how many people are going to go to the movies because there's a new vaccine and you can get it and you'll never be able to get the virus, everybody's back in. But until some scenario happens like that, I think it's going to be the same with sports. And concerts and large gatherings, because people need to feel safe if they're going to go into a large crowd that's out of, you know, that they can't control.
Tom Bernard's our guest. He's the co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, made a ton of great movies, won a bunch of Academy Awards. And before we talk hockey, Tom, because that's where I met you in the Bruckheimer tournament, talk about some of the movies you've made in your career. And first off, how did you get started? How did you end up at Sony Pictures running it? Because you've been there a long time.
Well, it was a long road, but it you know, just to do it quickly, I went to University of Maryland, played football there for a little bit until they gave me a special program to get bigger in the summer that I didn't think would be good for my health. And one day, me and my buddy were looking at what was happening in downtown Washington, D.C., and we saw that there was a storefront that was showing these movies from a Ken Kesey book called The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, about the sort of the beginning of the hipster movement, and they had a movies from the bus trip that they had taken, where they drove a school bus painted in Dagalo paints across the country, and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we went and saw it, thought it was great, went back to campus, saw actually a couple other movies, and then we said, hey, why don't we call this guy, see if we can get the film and show it on campus. And this was back in 1973. And we called Kenny Babs up in Oregon. He said, yeah, sure, yeah, send me $200, you know, when you get done, and I'll tell the guy to give you the 16-millimeter print. And so we did that, and then we were trying to figure out, okay, now we got to find a way to show it. And this was back in student protest days, and so there was a group called the Political Study Group, which all the people that wanted to have huge protests on campus would join, and all you had to do was declare yourself a member. We became a member. We got a projector, we rented a room, we ran all over Washington, D.C., and promoted the movie on campus at Maryland, and made a lot of money. And paid our way through school starting a film series. And right when I graduated, New Line Cinema offered me a job. And this was, I guess, in the late 70s. And the movie business and everything was changing. There was a much younger generation coming in. The movie business at that time, there were a lot of, you know, fat, bald guys with cigars and big blondes on their arms when you go to Cannes. And it was a real old school business. And a lot of people like me who were coming out of sort of a new generation with sort of a new way of doing things started getting into the business. And we didn't have the Mad Men ad agencies anymore. We, you know, we hired people who worked on the phone. We did, you know, grassroots work. Anyway, I started at New Line, went into a company called UA Classics, where we started the first specialized film division, and that was in the 80s. They had some shaky management. We moved to Orion Classics, started that for the rest of the 80s, and then in 91 started Sony Pictures Classics, and I've been there ever since. And, you know, our goal is to release quality movies from around the world. And so that, it's a pretty good gig, and I'm sticking to it.
Tommy, what's your most successful movie?
Well, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It did $130 million, and, you know, what was significant about it was it was sort of the first movie that sort of conditioned America, and I think Canada to a lesser extent, to be able to assimilate subtitles with the picture. Before, people, you know, there were dub movies that they tried to release in the country. They didn't work because people could see that the words didn't match the mouths. And for the subtitle movies, everybody just, they didn't know. Some people read them real fast and looked at the pictures. Some people you know, couldn't handle both, and they really weren't something that did anything outside a small sort of specialized group. But Ang Lee, who directed Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, was from Taiwan, but went to school in Indiana and NYU Film School. So he had the sensibility of U.S. filmmaking as well as, you know, an Asian background and upbringing. And so this movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which tells a story in Chinese, was directed in the style of an American film. And somehow, with that kind of filmmaking, and at that point in time when the movie came out, people were IMing. They had started to run the crawls on the bottom of the news. So people had become conditioned to be able to read words and look at a picture. And so this movie hit at the right time in the right place so people could read the subtitles. And when they walked out of it, a lot of people didn't even know it was a subtitled film. And so I don't think it'll ever be beat. $130 million was a lot of money at the time, and it won a lot of Oscars. And Ang Lee, you know, went on to become, you know, the prolific director he is today. And so that was the moment in time. That was a Stanley Cup.
And Stanley Cup brings me to hockey. That's how we met. The Jerry Bruckheimer Bad Boys tournament in Vegas that's been going on, that hasn't gone on the last couple of years, but went on for 20 plus years. How did it start? How did you get involved in the tournament? And give us some good PG rated stories from that tournament.
Well, the way I got involved in the tournament was interesting. I just started at Sony. And we work in New York City, and their main office is a big lot. You know, it's a Sony Pictures lot in Los Angeles. And Peter Guber was a guy who, he owns the Warriors now, and I think the Dodgers, but he was running the company at the time. And I was out there for, I don't know what kind of biz, some awards event or whatnot. And Peter had season tickets to the Kings, and he had four tickets that were right on the glass, and the Kings were playing Vancouver at the time, and that particular night, and I said, and I figured Peter will give me the tickets. He has no idea, you know, what's going on. I said, Peter, hey, could I get the tickets tonight? And he said, all right, yeah. And he took them from whoever it was, and I went to his office to pick them up. And as I was leaving, as I hit my hand hit the door, Peter said, why do you want them tonight? And I said, well, Wayne Gretzky might break Gordie Howe's record. And, you know, so it's going to, and he said, all right, you have one. And so I went to the game with Peter, this guy John Dolgen, who was a big muckety muck at Paramount, and Jeff Blake and myself. And this was one of the greatest nights for me, just in my hockey world that had ever happened. So I go there. We walk by. I meet Bruce McNowell. They say, "Oh, here, meet Bruce." And so I'm friends with him to this day. Bruce says, "Hey, you know, if Wayne scores tonight, we're going to have some. He's got some pictures in the back. You know, just come on back." None of these guys. It didn't register with any of these guys that just happened. And so I logged it for sure. And then Michael Eisner comes by. I meet him. Great. How you doing? And then Jerry comes by. Jerry Bruckheimer. And I knew Jerry had a skate out there that I had wanted to try and get into. And so they introduced me to Jerry. And I said, "Hey, Jerry, any way I can get in your skate?" And he said, "Yeah, sure. Come by. Come by Sunday." And so there I was. That locked me in. Wayne scored the goal. We went in the back. We got our pictures taken. McNowell got arrested, I guess, a month after that happened, so I didn't get the picture for about 2 years because they confiscated all his stuff. But that flipped me into the Jerry Bruckheimer skate, and that's what got me to Vegas when they decided we were going to have a tournament in Vegas that was going to be movie guys and guys that were hockey players.
And what was the first one? What year? So the tournament didn't exist yet. So you're there the night that Gretzky breaks the record, breaks Gordie Howe's record. You meet Bruckheimer, Michael Eisner, who's running Disney, who ran Paramount. I'm actually going to have him on the show next week, believe it or not. One of my favorite interviews. But so you're there that night. You meet Bruckheimer. You get into the skate. And how long after that did the Bruckheimer skate originate in Vegas? Did the Bad Boys tournament? What was the first one like?
Well, I went to Jerry's skate on Sunday night, and it was pretty bizarre. You know, Tom Cruise was skating, and he was skating kind of like Bambi. And then they had, guys that were, playing, in the minors that were skating, guys that just retired from the Kings, just an odd collection of characters. And so I went to a few of the skates and got along well with the guys. And there was a couple of guys that had gone to Las Vegas, I think, in 94 to, we'll skate and gamble. And a handful of those guys had a great time. And so the second year they said, "Hey, let's get a couple of teams together and we'll go there and play a tournament." And so I hooked up in 95 with that. I think Anson Carter was on my team. Marty McSorley was there. Luke Robitaille. It was pretty cool. And it wasn't like a fantasy camp. It was just sort of movie guys and hockey guys, so everybody sort of got along, and there wasn't that sort of fan thing that was going on, and it was successful and went on for 20 years.
Yeah, there's if you go down the list, we were having this discussion before the outbreak that we're currently experiencing, but we were going to try and put something together, and we're talking to the Hockey Hall of Fame about getting the Bruckheimer Cup in the Hockey Hall of Fame with some video and some jerseys. And just really quickly, Tom, before I let you go, go down the list of guys off the top of your head that have played in that tournament, NHL and actors and celebrities.
Well, Kiefer Sutherland certainly was there. Shoeless Joe, D.V. Sweeney was there. Alan Thicke was there. He got banned because he did a couple of commercials there, didn't tell anybody. The kind of players, you had Bugard, you had Steve Monador, you had Blake, you had Robitaille, Chelios, you had Ron Duguay, Gretzky came 1 year.
Fedorov.
That year
Tommy,
Fedorov
one year my
there.
Team, Tommy, 1 year my team was Sergei Fedorov, Luke Robitaille, Chris Chelios, Alexander Daigh, and Steve Shields playing D, and then there was this rookie who was playing for the Ottawa Senators, and nobody knew who he was, and it was Jason Spezza, and he was 19, and we played a game where we won, because the games were all like 9-7, 8-6, whatever it was, and they weren't even three full 20-minute periods, right? Spezza had, I think we stayed out till probably 7 in the morning, and Spezza had 7 goals in a 9-goal game. I mean, Fedorov and Robitaille and all those guys were so hungover, and Jason was only 19 or 20, and he scored 7 of our 9 goals. And then one of my favorite stories is that Chelios at the dinner. You remember that one where Chelios was at dinner, and he thought he was at a Greek wedding. Describe briefly in PG fashion before I let you go what happened that night.
Well, I think he was really excited about everything going on and wanted to show people a Greek tradition where you broke plates. And so he started breaking the plates in the restaurant and realized maybe wasn't a good idea. I think it became a little headline. But I'll tell you a story about the place that always cracked me up, because I became good friends with Brent Burns because his rookie year from Minnesota, he'd come there. And I remember him sitting there looking out the window saying, "I've never seen anything like this in my life." And, you know, he didn't drink the night before the game because it was a big deal for him. And he was playing for Minnesota, I think, that year. And he had such a great time that after the games were over, it was Sunday and people were staying over an extra day, he had everybody autograph him with magic markers that were still there.
His body.
Yeah, his body. Yeah.
I wonder if he got them tattooed. Knowing him, he just may have.
No, he's got a forest, I think, and a lot of animals on his back.
Tom, thanks a lot for doing this, pal. We'll get you on again because you got some great stories. Thank you very much, and continued success, and hopefully the movie business comes back like you described, and you continue to make great movies with Sony Pictures Classics. Thanks a lot for doing this, pal.
Well, thanks a lot, Joey. Hope to see you up there during Toronto Film Festival.